Hey Dennis, this is Dan, Alpha India 6 X-Ray Golf. Just want to say I really enjoy your podcasts. A lot of the hams that you interview I know from social media, or maybe even Chaser Activate them. So it's great to hear about the stories behind them and just what their interests are. So keep it up, and we've got to find somebody to interview you sometime. 73.
Hello and welcome to Hamdom Thoughts, a podcast about ham radio, electronics, software, and tinkering. I'm your host, Dennis, FCC licensed amateur radio operator, call sign 86DM. If you're in groups like the ARRL or local clubs, there's always talk about keeping the hobby alive and increasing the number of ham radio operators. Well, in today's episode, episode 10, we talk with Steve, K5ATA, also known as Good Game Ham Radio and Outdoors. Steve is one of those people who doesn't just speculate on how to get people interested, but he's out there actively garnering interest and getting people licensed. He's a teacher, he has an active YouTube channel, and is a shining example of engaging youth in science and technology. Let's talk with Steve and find out how he does it. Stay tuned. Hey, Steve.
Hey, Dennis.
Thanks for joining me today on the podcast.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me.
How are you doing today?
I've been doing a little ape dance with your intro music there.
Got enough coffee this morning?
We're getting there. I'm a couple pots in.
Yeah, I remember early on seeing you in one of Josh's Ham Radio Crash Course live streams. I saw your name scroll by in the chat, the live chat, and I said, wow, that's an interesting name, Good Game Bees and Outdoors. I think that was it. I don't know if you mentioned ham radio in the name back then too, but since then, I've seen that you've really taken the ham radio community by storm. Tons of live streams, you've premiered videos, you've been talking a lot about different things on your channel, your YouTube channel. So, why don't you introduce yourself? Tell us a little bit about how you got this all started.
All right. My name's Steve Goodgame, K5ATA. You're right. I started out being more of a beekeeping / homesteading kind of YouTube channel. More just growing my own food for stuff like that, you know, not wanting any more chemicals than I had to. And I do have bees. I still have bees, but I found that going through making videos and whatnot, I wasn't getting the enjoyment out of making beekeeping videos and stuff like I did initially. I've always been a teacher and doing ham radio with my kids. You know, several years ago, started in fourth graders and got to thinking, you know, I really ought to just pivot and do what I love to do and, you know, make ham radio YouTube videos. And that kind of coincided at the same time with the ARRL, who was looking for people for, their lifelong learning project to write curriculum for that. So I said, well, why not? It's kind of the same thing. So I shot an application over to them, and lo and behold, you know, they said, yeah, we'd love to have you make some videos and write curriculum for new ham. So at that point, I just took a hard pivot, and my name went through a couple renditions to try to pivot the channel over. You know, it was Good Game Bees, then it was Good Game Bees and Outdoors, and then I added ham radio, so Good Game Ham Radio or Bees Ham Radio, and out, you know, just kind of, it went through a few phases trying to pivot and not lose all of my subscriber base at the same time.
Yeah.
Because the YouTube engine doesn't like it when things fall off like that. So, And now here I am as Good Game Ham Radio and Outdoors. So, and been this way for several months now.
Yeah.
8, 9, 10 months, something like that.
You're also part of the YouTubers bunch.
I am.
Group. They, Great group. they meet up every, I think, is it weekly? And just kind of talk together and discuss various topics.
Yeah, we actually meet one day a month. We Zoom for several hours sometimes. And we make several episodes in kind of a sitting. So it's usually like, in fact, this afternoon we have another one where we'll film two or three episodes tonight. So it'll be a few hours of
that. I don't know if that's too much of pulling the curtain, but.
So, yeah, well, everybody's kind of figured out that we film it on the same day because our clothes don't change.
Oh, yeah. It's just like, wow, they're really consistent with their.
It's like, wow, look, he's wearing his shirt again.
Can you let's go back a little bit. I want to hear more about the bees because this is so fascinating to me. I know it has nothing to do with ham radio, but what does it take to raise bees and just be a beekeeper? My family is deathly afraid of bees, so I'm not, but I mean, that would be so cool to me. So can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, it takes significantly less to be a beekeeper than you think it does. Well, let me kind of change that. There are two, you have bee havers and beekeepers. You can be a bee haver where you just have a beehive. And for the most part, as long as you kind of keep it mowed around their hive entrance and take basic care, you know, bees will survive on their own for, as they do in the wild, mm-hmm. for a long time. The difference is, as a beekeeper, you're actively going in to the hives, checking on them, maybe splitting them to keep them from swarming and whatnot. I have six hives out there right now. Mm-hmm. But really, you know, you can go to a lot of stores, and I won't say any store names or anything, but there are some stores that sell package deals of everything you need to, you know, have a beehive, and it's ridiculously expensive. Mm-hmm. Or you can just, if you have any basic woodworking skills at all, you can build your own hives, and then you just have to buy frames, which are cheap. So you can build your own stuff for easily a quarter of the cost of what it takes to buy stuff to get started. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, usually when you start out, you end up buying a package of bees, which is kind of cool. When the male people just love me when I do that. I get a package, and it's a screened-in package with an upside-down can of heavy syrup and 3 to 5 pounds of bees shoved inside of it. So. You know, but that they do. They just mail it to you, and
I could imagine being the mailman for that.
Yeah, you dump them in a hive box, and you know everything goes right. The bee gods are looking down on you, then the bees stay. So, mm-hmm. you know, it's a lot of fun. I enjoy it. They really don't sting you as much as people think they do.
Sounds like a lot of fun.
So, and I still get out there and mess with them, but mm-hmm. I don't make the videos and stuff. Like I used to, I more just do bees for the enjoyment of doing bees. And it's a lot easier not to have to try to mess with the camera while you're in a bee suit and all that stuff anyway.
All right. Well, okay. Let me switch it up here a little bit. It's kind of a two-part question. One is more current events relevant. So I just read an article by KB6NU about the FCC proposing a $50 fee for anything, really, new licenses, modifications, vanity call signs. I think the only thing that doesn't cost anything is if you change your address. And so this is still in the proposal stage, but it's certainly got some hams talking. And I also wanted to ask you about the youth and, you know, how you're taking ham radio to many of the youth and your efforts there. So that's kind of my two part.
All right. Well, they're tied together pretty well. I read the same article that you did, you know, and AWRL's got it posted on their website. It's everywhere. The FCC, you're right. They want to charge $50 pretty much across the board for most licensing tasks. And yeah, I mean, it pretty well crawled under my skin. You know, I'm fortunate. I teach computer science and STEM, where my administration gives me the freedom, I guess, to get to teach ham radio to those kids. I call them the Padawans on my stream, so YouTube doesn't ding me. But
yes, the Padawans. You know,
it's last year I had 26 kids and 3 staff members get their ham radio license, and in fact, I just wrote a blog post this morning about the same thing. if I were to expect those 26 kids to have to pay a $50 fee to get their license, I might have had three. You know, because for a 12-year-old, $50 is a lot of cash.
Yeah.
And especially, you know, with a lot of parents not really understanding what it is they're going to do with a license, they're not so keen to kick out $50 for that either. So I look at it. In fact, I just responded to somebody, you know, Rhea was on Twitter, and I responded to somebody who replied to her on Twitter and said, you know, this is more than a speed bump. This is more like a wall. And if they have a $50 fee for folks to get into the hobby just to try it out, you know, they're not going to get into the hobby to try it out. They're just going to be like, well, forget it. I can just, you know, go buy FRS radios or not get into radio at all.
Yeah.
You know, and as for the Padawans, I mean, I teach in, it's a county school district. It's, you know, not everybody's well off, not, you know, we're not a poor school district by any means, but $50 is still a decent chunk of money, especially with everything else schools tend to ask for at the beginning of school.
Yeah. It's a significant thing to consider,
you know, and I mean, it's just, I don't see the point of having a monetary gatekeeper to keep people out of a hobby. And, you know, it's, in fact, Johnny Signal Search, Johnny WK5VW5, I always get his reversed, W5KV, but he responded to a tweet that I had, and he was the same thing. When most of your technicians are buying a $25 or $30 radio to try it out, but the license costs twice what the radio does just to get their feet wet, that's probably a problem.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely got people riled up. Yeah, we have been going through this so far. I think, I can't remember, but I may have paid back in the day, but then somehow things with like GMRS and ham radio, it seemed like it was a no fee situation for a long time. And then now bringing this back, but at this price point.
Yeah. And I don't remember if I mean, I was first licensed in early 94, and I don't remember. I mean, I know I paid something at the testing site, but I don't know how much of it was FCC fee and how much of it was, you know, just the club fee for their resources and whatnot. But it wasn't but $12 or something like that. I mean, it wasn't ridiculous, but through the years, and then I've upgraded several times, you know, and now, if it's okay with you, I'll go ahead and give a shout out to a couple of the VECs actually do completely free testing. You know, GLARG, during the whole pandemic thing, I still had kids waiting to take a test that couldn't test in person anymore. And so the GLARG folks, the Greater Los Angeles Amateur Radio Group, I think is what it, they reached out to me and they're like, hey, you've still got kids that need to take a test, we'll do them free.
Nice.
And so they took care of that. The before that, the Laurel VEC, who they catch a lot of flack because they don't endorse, you know, remote testing or whatever, but they do a lot of good things out there in the ham community. I mean, they there are no fees associated with anybody that wants to test. So they tested 40 something of my kids completely free of charge. They came to my school and tested my kids. So,
wow, that's, you know, cool.
Yeah, to all of a sudden start up with, we're going to have to charge $50. Yeah. You know, I'm just, it's a killer. It's going to kill programs like mine.
Yeah. I want to come back to what you're doing with students and how you're getting into that, but you do mention killing the hobby. So I want to also mention that I read another article this morning by K0LWC, and it's I'll link the article in the show notes. He talks about some of how hams believe that younger hams are killing the hobby. That's killing in quotes, as well as, you know, new modes like FT8, JS8 call, DMR as being dismissed modes by a certain, you know, kind of section of hams. Now, he's not agreeing with this, he's just commenting on some of the arguments that I have to say older hams are sometimes saying, and I just wanted to hear your thoughts on that.
I kind of touched on that briefly in my blog post today too, but it's my view on that is I understand, I guess, why some of the older people are those, that segment, you know, they're like, well, that's not real radio or whatever. It's just not radio like they learned radio. It's still radio. You know, things are going to change. We're going to innovate as we go. And my personal philosophy is kids are the people with their imagination knows very few limits. You know, if you tell a kid, I want to figure out a way to do this, they're not going to stop and think about the logistics of everything. They're going to just come up with these, you know, fantastic ideas of how you can make something happen with no regard for cost, obviously, yeah. But several of the other things as well. And a lot of times it's those big ideas that, you know, as we get older, as it gets handed off to other people, they say, that's actually, there's something to that. And they can refine the big ideas down and make them feasible. And I think that's where a lot of the you know, the new hams and the younger hams can contribute. Because, you know, as far as like DMR and D-Star and stuff like that, the digital voice modes, my kids love that stuff. It's a chance for them to get on a radio, and it, on a handheld radio, they can get on and they can talk to people around the world without having to convince mom and dad to, you know, buy them an HF rig or to run a 100-foot wire out into the yard and make the neighbors mad kind of thing. you know, there's the, as far as the digital modes, what like FT8, excuse me, a lot of people discount digital modes like that is, you know, well, you're not really having a QSO. And, you know, me, this is the computer age of kids. I mean, that's kids, they're into their technology. I mean, they, if I want to get kids into what a lot of people view as radio being kind of an older technology, but once you integrate it with a computer and show them things you can do with it, you know, using a computer and a radio together, then kids tend to take off with it. So, you know, it's more than just an easy way to get North Dakota with FT8, which is how I got my Wartell States. I mean, you know, but it, there's a lot more to it than just the mode of operation. I'm all for getting anybody into a hobby that's going to help innovate and grow the hobby. I mean, you know, these guys that are complaining it's not a valid mode or whatever, you know, the equipment's not the way they did it. I don't imagine they're all still using tube radios either.
Yeah.
You know, they've bought into some change. It's just, this is a little more change than they're willing to buy into.
Yeah. So. Yeah. And going back to the younger hams that you're helping, what was your goal when you set out to get more youth on the air?
Well, the goal was simply that, to get more youth on the air. I've kind of in and out of different school programs, gosh, since I started teaching 20 years ago or so. You know, I've gotten little pockets of kids licensed. And I say I've gotten them pocketed or licensed. I kind of, you know, led them, and they did the work. I just, you know, kind of steered them along the way. But, you know, I've had several fourth graders get licensed, some sixth graders get licensed, some eighth graders get licensed. And then, but it was always little groups of, you know, four or five at a time kind of. I mean, it was making an impact, but it wasn't huge. And then it wasn't until this last school year where my administrator said, hey, you have the freedom with these two class periods to do whatever you want to do with it, as long as you can relate it to STEM and whatnot. So I said, well, how about ham radio? And, you know, typically a lot of times people are like, well, how's that going to fit into my curriculum? But he was like, hey, go for it. And I never would have imagined getting 26 kids in a school year. And I actually had more that were, would have been ready to go by the end of the year, but, you know, we got coronaed out of school. Mm. So hopefully we'll pick them up. But my goal was simply just to get some more kids into ham radio and not just get a license, but find a way for them to get engaged and stay that way. And, you know, that's why we started an after-school club and started building a station and whatnot, because it's one thing to get a kid a piece of paper,
yeah,
and then they forget they have the piece of paper. Mm-hmm. You know, but get them a piece of paper in a place where they can operate without themselves having to spend a bunch of cash.
Yeah.
Then that's where they start developing their own interests and loves for radio.
So what's the name of your school ham radio club?
It's called the Doors Amateur Radio Club. It's short for Commodores. were the Lafayette Commodores. Down here in Mississippi, they call it Lafayette, not Lafayette, like they do in most other places. Oh,
well, I got to start pronouncing it right.
Yeah. Got a club call sign, N5LAF.
Okay.
And I just ordered the other day our club QSL cards.
Nice. So,
in fact, you know, just the other day, you were a part of that. And thank you for that. I guess we'll call it the fundraising drive to get them the 7,300. That should ship out shortly after Labor Day. So
that's great.
Everybody that, you know, donated that, they're getting a QSL card from the school club.
Oh, cool. So, but I hope to get one in earnest by actually contacting your club station.
Oh, you will. We're going to get it on the air. And, you know, that's because of the pandemic, we're not allowed to have after school club meetings right now. Mm-hmm. And so I was talking to my principal the other day. I'm like, look, you got to give me some way to work around this. And he was like, you know, he's like, well, you could almost just go to a park and set up. And if they happen to be there, and he said, but you don't want to be the one that ends up getting called on the carpet. So he said, how about you just turn the radio on during the school day and just play radio at school? Mm-hmm. And I was like, you're good with me just firing it up during the, because, you know, it's always been, I could teach it during the day, but, you know, during class and whatnot, because there are other classes nearby and whatnot. He goes, no, just fire it up and, you know, make sure you invite me down so I can talk. I'm like, okay, we can do that. So I expect the day that 7,300 gets there, I'm gonna throw an NFED half wave out the window, and we're gonna be on the air. So
nice. What, do you think that something like a remote setup would be feasible? Like maybe students can dial into the rig and use it.
Yeah, and you know there are sites that are actually free for students to use. Remote Ham Radio is. Oh, I forget the fella's name, but he steered me toward it. He was in the, instead of Hamvention, we had the day long sessions, and the name of it escapes me. There was a session that they were talking about youth on the air, and it was a young man up in Massachusetts somewhere up in there, that big time contester, and he kind of shot me an email and said, hey, you know, for your kids, why don't you look at this remote ham radio? It's free for kids. Mm-hmm. So that's another thing we're going to take a look at, because some of them have reliable internet at the house. They can do something like that and, you know, not necessarily have to set up a big station. So
yeah,
that's another thing I want. And it's also kind of a carrot to get them to upgrade.
Yeah.
You know, most of them stay. I did get a few of them that upgraded to general. My daughter got her technician, and then as soon as we activated a park and she couldn't use her call sign, but had to use dad's call sign, she's like, this isn't going to work. I need my own. And so she upgraded so that she could have her own HF privileges. And now she destroys me on our activations. But
yeah.
You know, those little carrots that look, you can get on the air and you can talk to people around the world. That's what, you know, kids work off of carrots.
Yeah.
What can I do with it? So
HF is definitely a big carrot, because it gets, you know, just the prospect of getting worldwide with this little rig that you have, it's pretty strong. It pulled me in. When I started realizing what people do in parks on the air and summits on the air, and just seeing some YouTubes of different people getting out there, I was like, I got to get my general. I got to get on this.
And it's funny when, you know, a kid looks at a radio and they're like, okay, my phone can do a lot of that. And they're kind of that way right up until that first contact they make on it. And they realize, you know, for example, last year, the first time I threw an HF station, I just brought my Kenwood TS-480 up to school and threw, I mean, it was, I hung my 40 meter antenna I use for parks on the air. I call it the bat dipole, because the little center insulator looks like the Batman signal. But, I threw it out there, and it was only 12 feet up. I mean, it was definitely not the best situation to have. And some guy in Virginia answered one of the kids' call, and that guy stayed on the radio for over an hour to make sure every one of those kids could talk on. And every single one of them just went home pumped. They're like, I talked to a guy in Virginia. I mean, it was, you know, something like they're right. They could just randomly call somebody in Virginia, but
yeah,
you know, the novelty of, wow, that was cool, and I did it with this little antenna that we, you know, put in a tree with coax running out of our window,
mm-hmm.
kind of thing. So the more of that I can do, the more of them I think that we'll get upgraded also.
So what are some of the other cool things you've done with the students? I really want to kind of emphasize this because I think this is a really cool aspect of what you're doing. And I just want to hear stories about the things that you're doing with the club and also just overall in STEM.
Well, with STEM in general, some of them are learning. Well, the eighth graders are all kind of learning Python right now. And at the same time, you know, we're kind of working through learning the Python programming language. And starting next week, we're going to start having like alternating days where it'll be Python day and then ham radio day. And I'll teach them some of basically I'm going through the AWRL licensing manual. You know, they've got a great program for teachers. I get those manuals at a discount and I get the PowerPoints to teach from. And so, you know, I start going through that and answering their questions. And but after about a week or two of that, what I typically try to do is I put a soldering iron in their hands because kids like to build stuff. And, you know, if they can take something home that they worked on and they made themselves, that's kind of setting the hook.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I teach them some of the basic ideas of what ham radio is, what you can do with it. You know, at that point, some of them were still kind of like, well, it sounds like what I can do with my phone and a Discord server mm-hmm. and whatnot. And, you know, then they start building stuff. And I spend an exorbitant amount of money buying stuff for them to build. You know, mm-hmm. I teach them to solder by using just old computer parts. And we unsolder parts and then solder parts back in just so they can learn to solder. And we're not destroying anything that's actually useful.
Mm-hmm.
And then I buy the, probably going to mispronounce the name. It's Elenco. They make a great little kit, and it's an FM radio receiver.
Oh,
and
I think
I've actually got one around here somewhere, but it's got step-by-step instructions on, you know, how to solder this to this. And some of them come with a cheesy little soldering iron that I've learned is not worth the extra $8 for the kit with the soldering iron.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, and I get them to start working on those, and financially I have to have them work in groups on those just because they're about $15 a piece. And so they kind of partner up and build them, and hopefully at the end of it, when they stick a battery in it and turn it on, it actually turns on and they hear radio, which is another novelty. Most kids don't listen to FM radio broadcasts anymore. You know, they stream everything.
Yeah,
they've got Spotify or whatever music streaming platform they like, and that's what they stream. So the first time that they turn it on and they're hearing, it's I guess for, you know, old people like me, it's fascinating to watch them go, well, where is this? What is this? And I'm like, this is the radio station right there by the Ford dealer. You know that? Like, oh, is that what that is? And it's, you know, and then they figure out that they're actually listening to somebody talking on radio, and they can take it with them and they don't have to have an internet signal to be able to stream it. And
yeah.
Stuff like that. And of course, inevitably half of the kits when the kids assemble them, because I kind of give them basic steps, you know, the basic things to do, but I don't lean over them and nitpick them. I want them to explore and experiment and see if they get messy with things. Sometimes things don't work. If they have a cold solder joint, stuff like that. So sometimes, you know, they power it up and they're like, well, that didn't work. Nothing's happening. And then they have to try to figure out how they're going to troubleshoot it. And at that level, the first thing they do is they find one that works. And, you know, they just want to set it next to one that works and compare to make sure all their parts are in the same place. And a lot of times it's something as simple as, you know, something is soldered in the wrong direction.
Yeah.
You know, something like that. And so, you know, it's all about the experimenting, that's not a word, experimenting and exploring and, you know, getting their interest that way. And then then of course I make them walk around. I say I make them. I let them, but they walk around the building and find that they can hear different signals differently using that same FM receiver. You know, if they go to the other side of the big brick building, they can hear different stations a lot of times than they can hear on the other side. And of course, that gets other people asking what it, you know, because it's squawking as they walk down the hallway. So people are stopping them and asking what they're doing, and they get to show off something that they built. And, you know, people are like, wow, that is so cool. And that's,
that is really cool.
And that's what they're saying. They go home saying, man, this is cool, Mom. Look what I built. And I let them take it home. Then the next day, the next kid that was in the group gets to take it home. And
yeah.
Show it off, and kids want to take it to church and show it off.
Yeah, them, I'm
don't
envious.
Turn it on in the middle of church because we get in trouble. But,
you know, but I'm envious. I wish I had access to these kind of projects when I was in school. That would have been. I probably would be an electrical engineer right now if I had that kind of stuff going on.
Yeah, I probably would.
I mean,
be
I had
too.
The chance to go to, you know, play with computers, and that really shaped my direction in life. But this stuff sounds fascinating.
Yeah, I in fact, same as you probably. I went to high school in Southern California, and we had a computer repair class that I took because I was interested in computers and stuff, but the computer repair class was less than I expected, I guess. It was more sitting around and playing video games on a computer.
Oh, okay.
And I was like, well, that is definitely not the model I'm after here. So, you know, if this guy had just busted out some soldering irons and said, let's build something and see how it works.
Yeah.
I'd probably have a different career path.
Yeah. So what are some of the activities that you like in ham radio? What are some of the things that you do as a enthusiast in the radio world?
Parks on the air. We're big into parks on the air stuff. My daughter and I activate parks together. Well, and most of the time she activates it and I get the leftovers because she flat out loves it. And it's great. You know, I don't mind even if I'm the guy sitting there logging her contacts for her, because how many dads out there get to go play radio with their kid?
Yeah.
And exactly. You know, so we go activate parks whenever we can. We'll be on the air at a local park. We're camping out for a couple days this weekend. And so we're going to activate that park that time. It's one of the things I'm hoping to get some of my students to do too. They would love to be able to do radio outside. Field day fell apart on us last year.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully things calm down enough that we can get them outside and on the air. I'm just now getting into satellite stuff, trying to work some of the AMSAT satellites and whatnot. So far I've yet to make a contact. I can hear them. it's amazingly busy.
Oh,
on
yeah.
Those things. I mean, it was,
yeah.
You know, I guess I was just shocked. You know, you hear people say, well, it's hard to make a contact with satellite. And I guess in my head, I always thought it's hard to just track the satellite with the antenna. But that's not it at all. It's, you know, just actually getting a word in edgewise to get your call sign heard. I mean, it's just when that pass starts, it's just nonstop. Boom. I mean, you know, my daughter's like, is something wrong with it? I'm like, no, baby, it's just that busy. She's my navigator for that. She's into astrophysics and astronomy and stuff. So she likes to point and tell me where to point the antenna. She says, nope, a little more southwest, Dad, a little more. There you go. And so, getting into doing that.
So do you have like an arrow antenna and I guess an HT or like a D72 or something like that for?
Well, actually what I'm using is the Anytone 878 to start out with.
Oh, okay.
It's just I used what I had. It was one of those, well, can I do it with this? And you can. You have to set it up a little differently. I mean, ideally, you want something that you can hear yourself on so that you know you're making it in. But this is what I had handy, so this is what we went with. A club member actually donated the Aero antenna to me because I said, you know, it's another thing that I think kids would be into. Is, you know, wow, I talked to somebody off a satellite in space. I mean, that's just, there's a certain coolness factor to it. And kids are into the coolness factor. So one of the guys at our local club meeting said, you know, I bought one a few years ago. It's just not my thing. If you want it, you're welcome to it. So I was like, done.
Yeah,
I am not one to turn down free gear for the Padawans.
I have a similar story. I have an Aero antenna for satellite, and it was actually given to me by N9BAV Dan, and I believe he's out in Texas, but I was mentioning that I was going to buy one to get into satellite and try it out, and he said, "Hey, I got one if you want it." I was like, "Oh, great. Yes, absolutely.
Yes, so, please."
It's a great antenna, and it breaks down very compact.
Yeah, in fact, when I opened it up, he said, "I can't find the instructions, but I think you'll be able to figure it out."
Oh, yeah.
I opened it up, and I was like, "Oh, you weren't kidding. It's a lot of parts, but it makes sense, though." Once you get things laid out, you're like, "Okay, I see what's supposed to happen here."
Yeah, I was sure to I think he included the instructions, which is basically just a printout on his computer from a PDF, I think. And I made sure to tape everything, color code it, so I wouldn't get confused by they're ever so slightly different in length. So
yeah,
I could very easily get confused putting it together without that help.
Yeah, and then you know, I had the kids. We collected a bunch of tape measures last year to build their own tape measure Yagis. Never got around to building it because, once again, school ended early.
Yeah.
But, you know, I have one that I built to show them what the end product was going to be and what the use would be for it. And there's a repeater it's about 40 miles away that here, on a really good day, I might be able to open up the repeater from school. Mm-hmm. But once you hook it up to the tape measure, yeah, I mean, it's no problem at all. You can hit it on low power. Wow. And the kids are just like, you know, and then just getting them to understand, you know, you can actually focus energy in a certain direction and whatnot. It's just, it's all, everything I do, one of the things I say, everything I try to do, I try to look through the lens of what can I do with a kid and how does it affect kids and can I get them on the air with it? So,
well, it's really cool. You're getting very creative here and coming up with all these different applications where it becomes tangible for your students.
So, well, yeah, kids at that age, they're very tangible. I mean, yeah. Especially, you know, some of the kids I get are sixth graders, which 11 years old, it's got to be a concrete, you know, where am I going with this? What am I going to be able to do with this? And then once they get some of the basic concrete stuff out, then they explode with being able to just play and come up with stuff. You know, I joke all the time. I'm like, make sure, you know, if you're going to start a school radio club and you're going to teach them to solder, buy extra solder, because I promise you the minute they figure out that, hey, look, when I touch this little metal wire looking thing to this hot iron, it just disappears. And I had one young man went through probably 10 feet of solder before he was just fascinated with it. He's like, just constantly feeding it in. And I mean, I made it back over to his station. I'm like, what are you doing? He's like, man, this stuff just disappears. It turns into these little blobs on the mat. I was like, okay, all right, we're good there. you know, but, you know, a lot of people would, you know, try to fuss at him. You're wasting this and that and the other, but he learned something right there.
I have a memory that just popped up when I was like maybe 6 years old. I did that to my dad's Weller. I found the roll and I created a nice, it was about the size of a fishing sinker.
a pile of shiny silver.
Yes, shiny lead blob. And then I think I actually touched it at one point, burned myself. And then my dad was kind of mad that I wasted so much solder. But then, you know, he let me keep that little thing.
Yeah, it's, you know, if everything, I mean, even when they screw something up, just look at it from the standpoint of, you know, did they learn something or can I turn it into a learning opportunity for them? There's no point in fussing at them for something that, you know, I mean, it's a soldering iron. I'm lucky I get to use them in school anyway with this age kid.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, if they learn something from the experience, that's what we're after, is constantly learn something new.
Yeah. So tell me about some of your gear, your home shack, portable setup. What's your favorite gear?
Well, let's see. Honestly, my favorite gear right now is not my gear. It's my daughter's. It's her. She's got that new G90 that. You know, she and Leah they got hooked up with a nice little POTA station each, and that's an amazing little radio for the size radio it is. We took that out to activate a park with it, and as small as that thing is, And I imagine, you know, it only puts out 20 watts anyway. And at first we were like, well, with 20 watts, you know, how good are we really going to do? And just a couple of weeks ago, I put a video out using that radio. And one of the Dons, KK4QAM, actually recorded our audio on the other side, you know, on his end of it. And that was really cool. But that's kind of become my favorite little radio that's not really my radio. In my shack, I have the Kenwood TS-480. It's the one with the auto-tuner, the SAT. And, I mean, it works. It's a good little radio, but I am thinking about throwing it in the truck for mobile use because here I've driven a lot of hours in the last week to and from New Orleans to get my mom and get her out of hurricane land and then take her back. And I'm sitting there thinking, you know, some HF would have been nice on that, that drive.
Some mobile HF.
So, and then I've got, you know, obviously the VHF, UHF. I've got an old Yaesu 2 meter or an old ICOM 2 meter, the 2100, and then one of those Anytone, the 778 is the older one. That's not the DMR. Mm-hmm. I've got a couple of those, one in here, one in Jerica's room, just cause they're $100 for dual band radio.
Yeah.
And whatnot. And
so now you have a 7300 to play with soon.
So yeah, well. The 7300 will be here sometime after Labor Day. And I'll play with it at home too. Cause it's not going to, something that valuable, I'm not going to leave just sitting it in a classroom at school.
Yeah.
You know, it's, there are a lot of sports that happen in the building and whatnot. And my classroom is right next to the gym. And quite often I come to school the next day and my classroom somehow or another is open. And, you know, the referees or whatever decided that they needed a room to sit in and then the door gets left open. And so just yesterday I went to a Harbor Freight and bought one of those Apache cases to be able to safely transport it to and from. And what I'm going to do with that is I got one big enough to not just hold the 7300, but I'm going to try to come up with a BioNO battery for the Padawans to have. So if we want to take it out to the football field, we don't have to worry about a power supply. And so I got one plenty big that we can have our own quote unquote go box for the kids. And it makes it easy for me just to transport it to and from school. I can just pick up the orange case and go.
Yeah, that's cool. How about antennas? What kind of antennas do you have?
At school, I don't have a permanent antenna up. I have an NFED half wave that I can throw out the window, which, you know, performs remarkably well. Here at home, I have a G5RV, but I'm actually going to probably replace that with, well, I won't replace it. I'll leave it up. You know how that goes. Yeah. Leave it up and just leave the coax there just in case I want to change. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to put up another NFED half wave here at the house. And I live on 20 acres. So I'm going to experiment at some point with, you know, just doing like a full size loop and just see how big of an antenna I can. I've got the space. I can put any size.
Yeah, you have the space. You could set up a 160 antenna if you wanted.
And I've got the space and the trees. So, you know, I need to do some looking as to how I'm going to keep things from breaking because we do get pretty windy. So it's going to take a little engineering to figure out to make sure that the last thing I want is for it to break at some point and then I have to go walk the entire thing through the woods and find where it broke. So,
yeah.
But that's going to be a fun experiment that I look forward to doing. My wife already gave approval. She's like, that sounds like a great idea. I'm like, score.
Nice.
So,
yeah, I get reluctant support is probably how I would phrase it for my different projects.
I'm lucky, you know, my wife got her license years ago. In fact, she got it at the ARRL National Convention when it was in Dallas, Texas and Arlington. And, she got it purely because I was licensed and I kind of hinted it'd be cool if she got hers. So she went on ahead and did it. Then my daughter's got her license. So I don't have a whole lot of trouble convincing her to let me put stuff up at the house. So, you know, the advantage of living out in the country on 20 acres is I don't have to worry so much about what the neighbors are going to say about the wire running next to their house because it's not going to be anywhere near their house.
Yeah.
I mean, they can't see it.
It's going to be invisible to them.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I wanted to also touch on your experiences as a volunteer firefighter. I was reading about that on your site, and actually on QRZ is where I saw it. Yeah. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that and how it's shaped your view of MCOM and preparedness and ham radio?
I'm a volunteer fireman. I've been so for, I guess, going on 9 years or so, I guess, now. I actually got into doing that because I lit my yard on fire. And when the woods caught fire and, you know, the fire department came to put it out, they came and put it. I mean, it was, gosh, there were 20 or 30 guys here in trucks, and they got everything out. And afterward, I was like, what do I owe y'all? Where's the bill going to come from? And they're like, you don't owe us a dime. It's, you know, it's what we do. And I just thought it was cool. I was like, really? And they're like, and I've kind of got that pay it forward mentality. And I was like, well, you know, how do I volunteer to help out? Because that's kind of cool. Got into it, you know, went to the meeting, signed up, and I've advanced, and I'm a captain on our department now. And
oh, cool.
You know, it's fun, but it's stressful at the same time. It can be.
Oh yeah.
You know, it's a lot of, you know, being a volunteer. We don't necessarily sit around the station all day, kind of thing. I'm at home with a radio, and
yeah,
when it goes off, I just get up and go, kind of thing. And so it goes from, you know, not even really consciously thinking about it to, you know, the adrenaline is rushing right away and whatnot. But as far as how it shapes my MCOM thing, my fire chief's a ham also. So we actually have an HF rig at the station.
Oh, that's good.
We've got a generator and everything. We've got an antenna up so that, you know, if we needed to, we could operate from there. I'm the emergency coordinator for ARRL for our county now. And, you know, a lot of things as far as ham radio's usefulness in emergency situations is slowly over time, I think, dwindling away, because there are other systems getting put in place that are reliable and whatnot. But, you know, I think at the same time, I kind of had the viewpoint of always kind of be prepared just in case. You know, I mean, it's even if we never get called on for an actual emergency, you know, when we have little training exercises or something, you know, it's still a chance to go out and play radio. So, you know, if you look at it from that standpoint, I mean, that's ideally what field day is supposed to be, is just practicing. It's not really a contest. It's an event to, you know, practice your radio skills and operating from the field. So,
yeah,
you know, I kind of view that as in the same light, I guess. Is the station always ready to run? And, you know, sometimes, you know, we'll just show up there and, you know, maybe it's a quick meeting night or something like that and fire up the HF rig and get on the air. So I do try to get other firefighters into ham radio as well. I've got one studying right now. So it's also an outreach tool for the hobby in itself, because it fits well with them. So,
yeah. Wow, that's really cool. How many years now has it been that you've been?
Trying to remember. It's like 9 or 10. It's been a hot minute. It's been.
Yeah. That is really cool.
I lit my house or my yard on fire shortly after moving here, and I've been here.
And it's also cool that you're the EC for your county. That's
That's a recent appointment. So I'm still getting my feet wet on that department, but mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting. There's a whole lot to it that, you know, a lot of courses and stuff that you do ARRL to finish all that out, that finding time in the day to get everything done is proving harder and harder.
Yeah. But, good path to be on. I took the EC001 course early on, in my hopes to get more active in Aries.
So, yeah. And, you know, my mom, like I said, she lives down in the, New Orleans area. And so, you know, that's another thing, ham radio. I made a few friends in her area down there so that if there is ever anything, you know, ham radio serves more purposes than just, you know, actively going out and, you know, running races and, or, you know, monitoring races and whatnot. The traffic handling is a lot of it. You know, if there's no power down there because of a hurricane, I can get a hold of somebody still. and they can check and make sure, you know, are your folks okay? They can get messages in and out, to other, you know, health and welfare kind of messages. And that's kind of another area that I think ham radio really kind of needs to focus with some of his airy stuff.
Yeah. Well, I think I'll call it right here. Do you have any other advice that you'd like to give people or any other things you would want to mention?
As far as obviously my thing is getting kids on the air. So, you know, find a school in your area or find the STEM teacher and see if you can't get something started. Even if you can't necessarily go in and teach or whatever, you know, if you light the fire with somebody, support a school radio club somehow. You know, a lot of people are like, oh, well, I don't have the disposable income to support a radio club. I mean, anything from if you have an old unused Baofeng that's sitting around, you know, and find a school club that could use it. Or even just if you hear a school club calling on the air, answer them. Stay on the air so that those kids get a chance to talk. Because for a lot of them, that may be the hook, you know, that, oh, I talked to a guy in this state and that's where my uncle lives or something cool like that. Mm-hmm. You know, they'll make a connection. So there are a lot more ways to support getting kids on the air than just financially, obviously. So, mm-hmm. You know, get creative and, you know, if people want ways to help that, they're welcome to email me. And I am more than glad.
Yeah.
To
That's what them. I was thinking while you were saying that is that you're a fountain of creative ideas with working with students daily, and yeah, they should probably reach out to you and they could probably get some ideas.
So they're certainly welcome to. I've got several folks that do that already. They just, you know, hey, I'm thinking about this. What do you think? And you know, that goes both ways. A lot of times, you know, I'm quick to say in every live stream, I'm not the only thinker in the room, you know. I know a little bit about a lot of things, and some of you know a whole lot about something that I only know a little about. So, you know, we can all learn from each other, and that's the mentality I want to make sure that we carry forward as hams, and especially towards kids.
Yeah. Well, Steve, thank you very much for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
It's
an honor to be on your podcast.
You are very inspiring. I think that the work that you're doing, getting this technology and this interest in front of the next generation of hams is awesome and admirable. And I really want to support that in any way I can. So hopefully this episode can get the word out more as well. Hopefully people will think more about how to get the youth engaged. And I'll link your Twitter, your YouTube, and your website in the show notes so that people can learn more about what you do.
Great. Thank you.
All right. So I think that's it. Thanks. I'll catch you online. I'll catch you at your next live stream.
Yeah, it'll be me and Ape on Wednesday.
Okay, cool.
So, all right, man. I'll talk to you later.
All right. You've been listening to Hamdom Thoughts Podcast. I'm AD6DM Dennis. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time.